In today's episode of Another World is Possible, we look at dystopias and the Cassandra problem. Let's start with a question. If you were writing now to warn others about underlying trends in the society that you thought will only get worse, what are the trends you would identify? The answers now might seem obvious. Climate change, for instance, or growing political authoritarianism. But what if you had been writing 25 or 35 years ago, like Octavia Butler or Fred Feil, and projected your warning in the form of dystopian novels set in the here and now, in the 2020s, as they did? What back then would you have warned against? And what if we had known back then, in the 1980s or 1990s, what we know now about what our society has become? What, in other words, if we had paid attention to their very smart warnings? Would we have acted any differently? Made other choices with our lives? Tried to reach out to others with a greater sense of urgency? Or would we, as the exploited and oppressed in this country and in the world, as workers and women, and minority groups of so many types, still have been like the frogs in slowly heating water, adapting always to just a bit more discomfort as the temperature rises? I'm calling this the Cassandra problem. Cassandra was a priestess in the temple of the god Apollo back in the time of the Trojan War. Seeking her sexual favors, Apollo gave her the gift of prophecy. She could foretell the future. Unable to withdraw the gift when she rejected him, the gods apparently had rules against this sort of giving and taking back, Apollo added the vindictive restriction that no one would ever believe her predictions. As an example, when the Greeks pretended to leave Troy, but left behind the Trojan horse filled with Greek warriors, Cassandra was the one who saw through the trick and tried to warn her fellow Trojans. When they didn't believe her, she took action by herself, rushing the large wooden horse with an axe and with fire. But she was stopped by her disbelieving countrymen. We know how that turned out. The Trojans pulled the horse inside their gates, thinking it was a trophy, and celebrated what they thought was their victory. In the night, the Greek soldiers came out of the horse, opened the gates to their countrymen, and won the war. As for Cassandra, wise beyond humanity, but ever ignored, she went mad. 20th and 21st century Cassandras may or may not go mad, but they do write dystopian novels. Today, in Another World is Possible, we'll look primarily at one of these, set in our very year, Fred Feil's Goodman 2020. That was the theme song from The Guillotine by The Coup. Fred Feil was briefly an Oregonian. I knew him here in the early 1980s when he was working on this novel. Better known as a cultural critic, he focused on gender roles, especially expectations around masculinity, and some of those concerns are prominent in Goodman 2020. He and Octavia Butler, she writing a decade or so after he did, had similar visions of what society would be like by the time we got to 2020. But they wrote from the perspective of very different kinds of characters and with very different visions for where we, the recipients of their warning, might find hope. I'll return to Butler, especially her parable of the sower, in a future episode of Another World is Possible. So what did file, that's spelled P-F-E-I-L, what did Fred File identify as underlying the problems he foresaw? What was at the root of the more visible issues that would only become worse? Beneath issues like systemic racism and climate change, corporate control and political authoritarianism, all of which are strongly present in Goodman 2020, File identified the drive within our economic system to convert everything, and I do mean everything, into a source of profit for a small elite. I imagine him looking around, saying to himself, "What hasn't yet been turned into a commodity? What do we now hold in common, or think of as sacred and non-marketable, that could instead be privatized and made profitable? What could I highlight that now would seem inconceivable as an item for sale, but would get people to see how all facets of our lives are becoming thingified and turned into marketing opportunities?" Those were my words, of course, as I imagined the author's thinking process. What he chose was friendship. Ernest Goodman, the name sounds like someone out of those old religious novels like Pilgrim's Progress, where names are meant to tell you something about people's character. Ernest Goodman is a professional friend, graduate of a friendship training program, accredited and available for contractual hire as a friend. The book's epigraph, a quote from Walt Whitman, gives us a clue even before the story begins.
"Camarado, I give you my hand. I give you my love, more precious than money. I give you myself before preaching or law. Will you give me yourself? Will you come travel with me? Shall we stick by each other as long as we live?"
Love more precious than money. Whitman, of course, was a 19th century U.S. poet with a broader view of friendship than the sexual mores of his time acknowledged. Completely straightforward and heartfelt in Whitman, that quote as an epigraph in Goodman 2020 is nothing but irony. In the world of 2020, our very year, as File prophesied back in the 1970s and 1980s, corporations control and politicians do what they're told. Manufacturing has left the U.S. in search of cheaper, more readily controllable workers. Everyone not white and formerly working class whites are unemployed, no longer capitalist consumers, and driven to the peripheries of cities like the favelas and slums of third world countries. Middle class whites, with nothing to do but endlessly consume, are subsidized by the state, bored and sexually dysfunctional. Elites are no longer national, have no allegiance to any particular country, and form a small international ruling class dominated by corporate heads. The first few pages of Goodman 2020 set the context. The book begins,
"Foggy Bottom, the setting of this story's first scene, is an area of central Washington where political power is presumably held. In the White House, the Executive Office Building, FBI headquarters, etc. The Lincoln Memorial is within its environs, and at night, with the correct outdoor nocturnal pass, one can stand by the Potomac River, which bounds this area to the south and west, look across, and see the natural gas burning in John Kennedy's memorial, like some barbaric tribal campfire from another age."
You caught that, right? Power is only presumably held in the White House, etc. Then, after the action that sets the plot in motion, we're given an overview.
"A clumsy arrangement. Few people have jobs. Most work has been automated and/or sent overseas. Yet multinationals still need many, if not most of us, as part of the huge market they must keep hold of to survive and expand. They cannot make enough by selling their products from one subsidiary to another, or from corporation to corporation, or by getting in on the little non-nuclear wars that flare up here and there from time to time. But in neighborhoods, it sometimes happens that a fine old brownstone caves in suddenly like a sick old person's face. Or the people in the upstairs apartment set fire to their own rooms and take off. People, good people, people who've always had enough, suddenly start shooting junk or taking other newer chemicals, like Hatsi, that bring immediate ecstasy at the cost of severe long-term damage. Someone finds a stain on a blouse bought in a Bloomingdale's, and the whole mall gets pulled apart. Guards come. People get torched down. Appropriate measures have been taken to keep the lid on this queasiness, these random outbursts. New security regulations, pass restrictions and curfews, more police, far better equipped. But it is a new, odd poverty and hard to control, this pointlessness, famine of purpose, drought of need.
The plot is complex and told from multiple points of view, woman and child, corporate head, and more. Briefly, Ernest Goodman undergoes real-life tests to determine his suitability as hired friend for the head of Omnicor, gigantic multinational conglomerate. Goodman's weakness, or his vulnerability, is that his training and his job don't wholly define him. He's in a genuine love relationship with all its real difficulties and rewards, and helping to raise a child. In other words, he's also grounded in a reality that escapes people like Dick Devine, head of Omnicor, who have everything and think they control everything. To control Ernest, they need to make him into one of them, to bring him entirely into their sanitized, controlled, pseudo-reality. Pushed too far, Ernest uses his training to rebel in what he thinks of as only an individual act of desperation and self-sacrifice, but finds unexpected solidarity. Along the way, there are nihilist groups created by corporations to engage in random acts of violence in order to provide outlets for mass frustration, and staged assassination attempts in which corporate subordinates actually are killed to provide brief thrills, momentary feelings of danger, of being alive, for jaded corporate heads. Omnicor figures out new ways to profit from the devastation capitalism has caused, selling surveillance and security systems, and marketing heroin and other drugs through its clinics. Opening a new production facility in Latin America requires overthrowing the previous government there. We are taken inside the planning for a coup arranged with the compliance of other conglomerates and the connivance of the U.S. government. There's much more to say about Fred Feil's depiction of race, gender, environment, etc., and how he relates all these to each other and to commodification, the incessant drive that is capitalism, to turn everything into profit. Especially there's more to say about how, in this bleak forecast from decades ago, the author thought we might avoid his dystopia, and where he thinks we might find hope. We'll continue the discussion of Goodman 2020, Dystopia, and the Cassandra Problem in the next episode of Another World is Possible. This has been Norm Diamond for the Old Mole Variety Hour.